Despite this as preface, this was a panel I suggested, which is one of the reasons why I'm not doing it. Coming down the pipe are a whole bunch of really exciting new technologies.
Yay! Just started.
There's a whole bunch of new exciting technologies that may or may not be a solution to the whole bunch of doom and glooms that are also coming down at a very similar rate. Although the panel was titled Global Warming, that wasn't actually on my original description, because yes, that's one of the potential issues we face, but it is not one of the only ones. There's quite a few that I could name off the top of my head, and as hopefully over the panel we will discuss those and name them, and then see if we can spot anything coming down that will, may or may not be a solution. And this is Dave Kerr, who I'm sure would like to say stuff. maybe not on the last day of the convention.
Yes. It's an interesting because there's a lot of I find that the panel is this whole idea that either we're going to go down and or we're going to take off and
well, that's the popular opinion.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily my opinion, but certainly if you read the newspapers and you read the popular SF, which I assume most of us here do, you tend to get these visions of one or the other.
Is there any reason we can't do both?
Well, this is one of the things is, from my readings of a variety of sources, including NextBigFuture.com, they do tend to counter each other fairly effectively. You know, this problem tends to get countered by this technology, and I hope as we go to the panel we'll look at some of them.
Yes, there's the whole global economic catastrophe. Oh well, we're going to afford cars, that'll help it easily. We can no longer afford
cars.
Part of the reason why there's a lot of people not panicking about global warming, I mean, it's a slow catastrophe, and not that slow, but, you know, it's not going to happen in 2 weeks. Are you itching to say something crazy, Roman? And previous slow catastrophes, like the that we were warned about, have all sort of proved not to happen. And so there's this sense of sort of global overconfidence about, oh, look, it's just like the population explosion. Eventually we'll just get clever and sort it out.
Or global cooling.
There's a whole, it's not that big, not a big thing to panic about. Well, it kind of is. The panicking is what helps you come up with those solutions that may pull you out of the slow catastrophe. The population crisis of the 70s was all the 60s and so on, was all basically beaten by better agricultural engineering. We can feed people more cheaper than we thought.
First of all establish what all the issues are and the topics and everything.
I was about to suggest that one of the things we might want to do is grab the whiteboard and start looking at some of the obvious ones. And it's really good thing to get some feedback from the audience, so I'll get you if you can start grabbing names and stuff out of it. And
we want names?
Oh, sorry, not names. Disasters coming up.
Disaster.
Okay, so I think we'll probably start by writing up global warming because it's
fair. Yeah. Shay?
No, I was just going to comment on solving the agricultural problem.
The agricultural problem?
Okay.
I'm sorry, what was your name?
Roman.
Hi, Roman. Would you like?
Water.
Yeah.
Potable water.
Pete Petra?
Yep,
there.
Plant varieties.
Biodiversity.
Well, no, just for gene technology.
Yeah,
that's the bad. flat biodiversity.
As somebody who tries to buy heritage seeds these days, I'm all with you there.
Any other ideas? Disease?
Wildfire disease?
Yeah. Well, the next big pandemic.
Sorry?
Yeah.
The next big pandemic.
Yeah. It's called Windows. No.
Which probably isn't zombies.
Probably not. No guarantee.
Can we put in fascism / totalitarian?
It's always a deluding
thing.
I'm sure I'm quite agreeing with Ron on that. I'm going to put that in. I'll call it totalitarianism. Because I sometimes was really worried about that after election.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I mentioned fashion in particular is that there's also that whole element of large corporations.
Yeah.
Wanting to guarantee their futures.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call it, but that's the same thing with big religions.
Nuclear war?
Religious intolerance, religious. I think that's a good rise of religious fundamentalism.
Shay suggested nuclear war. That could tie into, I know there are people who are talking about, worried about invasion, like, you know, the rise of India and China. Oh no, they're going to invade Australia.
I'm less worried about that.
It is a concern that people have raised.
But India and Pakistan is more of a concern for me. Yeah, a whole war on their border.
Yeah, nuclear war can happen just because somebody screws up.
Yes. And the order response systems respond. The one we were talking about, the panel the other night, collapse of society.
Societal collapse.
So, what's your name?
This is coming from being in primary healthcare overeating.
That's
one of our serious crises in survival.
Overeating?
Overeating.
Onto the food shortage.
I'm just going to flip the board to get the other side. That would almost be dietary issues, wouldn't it? Because it's not just overeating, it's things like high fructose. The fact that we're eating more and more and getting less and less out of it.
Yeah.
Pollution.
I don't know, we seem to have got into the realm of.
Some of these are slow.
Like issues that aren't. They don't seem to be global civilization disaster.
I think pollution
the rising the speed with which diabetes is being diagnosed.
In a first world country,
Malnutrition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's actually a really nice word, because it doesn't just mean that you're not getting enough food, it means you're just getting not good food.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, one of the common things to see when I was in Central Australia recently was people who were both badly obese and badly malnourished at the same time. So it's a sort of tiny waste of muscle consumption and huge amounts.
Are we also happy that societal collapse includes global economic meltdown?
Yes.
Because, yeah, that. They may not be linked,
but they're problems.
Okay, so we've got some bad things. I think that's enough to restart. Are we all happy that that's a fairly...
Happy not necessarily the word.
Well, no. Screening is generally hard.
It's a reasonable cross-section.
Yeah.
You want
to
break?
I think I'm going to count that technically as pollution. Not voted for to call it pollution, but yeah. Okay, so which of these are particularly... does anybody know about the concept of a premises where something tunnels along and then creates a feedback loop and it gets real bad real quick? Are we all familiar with that concept? We're all happy with that? Okay, which of these are prone to premises effect?
I mean, global warming is often listed as one...
And disaster is one. Global warming is certainly one of
the... Water. Well, we don't have any water.
People want premises because
No, because peak oil is supposed to, I mean, it's supposed to go up and then down. It's not supposed to suddenly go. I mean, the peak oilers tend to talk it up into being a sudden disaster, yeah, but only because they basically say peak oil inevitably leads to economic collapse, inevitably leads to. I don't think that is that inevitable.
Yeah, pandemic is certainly one. Because, you know, the first couple of people running screaming caused it to accelerate into a much bigger disaster.
Nuclear war, definitely.
Yeah. Such with sharp. And some type of collapse is obviously one. Things like potable water, although it's a bad thing, doesn't accelerate itself so much.
Potentially pollution. There are some scenarios, like, you know, some of these tankers full of, you know, nasty things, you know, one of them runs aground and, you know, wipe out the algae, etc., etc.
Yeah,
and they do tend to purpose.
Malnutrition would fit in with global warming and agricultural disasters.
They could be linked, but it is, in itself is not a it's not a
big But it takes a long time for
a lot of these problems, the problem itself will cause flow-on problems.
Yeah.
But we were specifically talking about when the problem makes itself worse.
Yeah. So, pandemic because what happens?
Yeah. So like most of these problems are likely to help cause malnutrition eventually, but they don't. But malnutrition does not in itself make malnutrition worse. I mean, maybe at the extreme end where you suddenly become so malnourished you can no longer work in the fields, but, you know, it's...
which is a bad place to be, but... Yeah. So we've had a bit of a look at that. That's a good thing. So what's coming that could get us out of some of these troubles or attention or these troubles? One of the things
gives hope, John.
There's a whole bunch of... really crazy whacked out technologies that are always emerging, and we may even not spot them on the count. You never know what's going to come out of left field. To quote something that Dave Cape on the a long time ago, was the mad cyber pump writers in the 80s didn't spot mobile phones.
Yeah, so this is why cyberpunk is this weird ultimate future where computer technology took off but no one invented mobile phones, and just, you know, it makes no sense anymore.
Yeah, and so, you know, we may not be able to see it, but there's certainly some technologies that are interesting.
Look at the internet, number one, please.
Yes, certainly. I will flip the board at this point.
There's lots of reasons people
can't.
Okay,
that's fine. Yeah,
we
should be able to.
Ellie's doing that. We've got internet. What else?
Cheap energy.
There's a quote many years ago by a person that not everybody necessarily liked, which is Jerry Cornell, in that he said that all crises at the end of the day are energy crises.
Yeah, all crises at the end of the day are social crises.
Yeah.
Everything's in the physics or stand for that. That's irrelevant.
Yes, it's only on science.
Sorry, I'd be interested. Yeah. I don't know your name, sorry. Stephen, I'd be interested. Cheap energy. How do you actually see that coming about?
Well, that's the thing. It's one of those things that's going to come out of left field. Things like cold fusion or a lot of the other. There's a lot of work being done on.
I actually was really into cheap energy because
I'm just using cheap energy as a
categories. Yeah, so. Sure.
Okay, you want to use it as an umbrella set? 90% solar panels. Any other technology you want to list?
Cheap nukes.
Cold fusion.
The plans you see around for cheap nuclear reactors that are like fit inside this room to actually consume nuclear waste rather than produce it.
Yeah.
Bed
reactors.
Yeah.
One of my favourite quotes recently. on the whole idea of these nukes that burn us. Somebody said, oh, we can always use this, all this power we've got to throw the nuclear waste in the sun. The moderator of the board said, no, that's just fuel that we haven't burnt properly yet. So the more radical nuclear people are increasingly talking about reactor cycles where you have three or four different designs that feed into each other, where what you get out of the end, you drop back in the hole, you dump the
electrons. And essentially you can put what was now nuclear waste at the start and look, consume it.
It does seem that's far distant rather than near distant.
Nuclear batteries. You've got what they call Hyperion energy. They're starting to produce them now. You can fit them on the back of a flatbed truck, produce about, they're small ones, but produce about 35 megawatts electric.
Yeah, but you're better off with some of the fuel cell technologies that aren't nuclear. Mm. Because of all sorts of associated
effects. It's the regulatory problems that make nuclear untenable at the moment. And just the general fear, they're uninsurable. That may well change. If it turns out to be the only way to stop, China spitting out coal-fired generators every second day or whatever they do.
And they're one of the countries that's really quite seriously looking at. But at the same time, they're also looking at some of the biggest clean energy projects.
The solar is definitely a huge one. It's not the wholesale cost of solar, I think, has gone from, at the moment, the wholesale cost of building coal generators is about $220 a watt, I think, and the wholesale cost of building solar at the moment is about $4 a watt, and they think they can get it down to under $1 within the next 5 years. There's companies building.
Solar cell technology might be down to cheaper than coal.
Okay,
solar is sufficient area equivalent
cells, regardless. It's okay. It's not so bad for us here, but we're less practical for the UK.
When you've got
a whole road services.
Yeah, the one of the things. Broken's not too far off, but one of the designs I've seen is that there's a German company that came up with a solar cell that was flexible, and they cannot sell you anything for 5 years because basically Japan bought their entire back stock. Yeah. We have a problem on flash, yes, we know. We'll buy it all. And their plans is they're just going to. One of the features of it is light permeable. Some like insert, so they're literally going to start coating buildings. They're going to use it as their solar screen that most buildings have, and their solar power.
The other idea of doing is basically making curtains out of it.
Yeah.
The problem with it is that it needs to be coupled with storage technology because solar power is always generated off peak times.
Yeah.
Which is where the solar, the thermoelectric stuff where they use the solar power to heat things, which then generates the power. It's a little bit less efficient, but it seems to be catching on.
There are several solutions to the storage problem. Even if you just say, well, the sun's always shining somewhere in the world, high volume is easy all the way around. Yeah.
I lean into my next one that I wanted to point out. This is cheap energy is not just generation. One of the things that we're starting to see is much better transmission.
And energy efficiency.
One of my favourite things is the increasing use in particularly older cities of superconductors, simply because they've got that much room to run the power down, and that's all they're ever going to get because it's running through a heritage listed building. So they build themselves a superconductor pipe, and they are not. This is not pilot stuff. They are in use right now, all the way through New York. This is the only way they can get power from over there to over there in thousand areas.
The public infrastructure of New York is fascinating. The whole stuff about the New York water supply, where currently they're needing to rebuild some of the drains, and the drains are sort of like kilometres down under the city, and they've got to replace one big valve for turnips or something, and so they've had divers living down there for 6 months. Who have to breathe 90% helium because they're under that much pressure and come up. They go down there for 3 months at a time working
deep beneath the water. Just wow. Try again. It's frightening, frightening stuff.
Okay, any more?
Help me work. Volunteers, yeah. They're interested in helping. Especially the ones that don't compete with good supplies.
Yeah.
And one of the, actually, another one that I have a personal interest in is cracking pollution. I was working with a company that was looking at exploiting a technology to work in Japan where they processed waste quickly into diesel. The reason why they were doing it in Japan was that
there's a lot of waste.
Not only that, but disposing of it in Japan is incredibly expensive. So turning it into diesel that you can then drive your trucks around on is a saving because you don't have the plastic, not because you've got the diesel. The diesel's a byproduct.
Yeah. One of the things I
found
in Japan was and one of the things that comes down quite strongly on this, there isn't necessarily one global solution to like biofuels or cheap energy. It's going to be a different solution depending on where you are and what's available locally and what your issues are.
The solar, it's not going to work so well in Norway, for instance.
Yeah. And the solar in particular,
but this one might be good.
But compared to some of these other solutions, one of the things about solar is it requires you can start with a very little infrastructure. You have a big sheet of solar sheet, roll it out, you've got something. You've got power for, you know, you've got power during the day for your village.
Yeah. It's a bootstrap technology. It allows you to lift yourself up.
Yeah. Well, it's not just, I mean, it's also a sustainable.
The same is true of most of the renewables. That's a big difference.
Yeah,
it's easy from a small plant, immediately accessible. Wind is classic.
Yeah, and if you're, like a lot of like remote communities, you can't. Any, it doesn't matter how good the distribution technology is, it's going to be a huge pain in remote communities.
Geothermal and wave energy.
Even though there's a lot of
problems with wave. Wave, because they're actually quite related to the My favourite crazy ass geothermal, it's not quite wind, and it's not quite solar, and it's not quite geothermal, but they were going to build a pilot plant, I think, here in Adelaide, where it was this huge ass pseudo pyramid, so it looked like an inverted old, you know, grandfather's
Victoria, actually.
Was it Victoria? I thought it was going to be Adelaide. They were going to build this huge plastic funnel and put a fan at the top.
I always say huge acres.
Yeah,
many acres.
I think it was kilometres tall.
Kilometres tall.
Yeah. It's an enormous thing. That was all almost transparent, I think. And so one of the things they said was underneath you plant trees. And the wind came from all that underneath got hotter than the surrounding because of the side being trapped. And the wind blows through the turbine at the top. But it was made up of some quite serious numbers of megawatts.
Mm. It was amazing. Oh. You know, it doesn't seem to have gone any further.
Unfortunately, I think it died.
Moving on beyond energy, how about things like carbon sequestration?
Yep. Yes, carbon sequestration, geoengineering.
Well, like carbon fixes needs to be worked
on. Oh, that's a classic technology. Paul, do you want to describe it?
Yeah, well, it's much at the moment. Yeah.
Thank you.
Cement produces huge amounts of CO2. So you're burning your limestone, it produces quite a number of something like a ton of CO2 for every ton of cement that you produce. There's a couple of different technologies that they're looking at now, which produces cement that ends up absorbing CO2. The Calera cement one, I think, absorbs half a ton of CO2 for every ton of cement.
One of the things that I was saying is that all concrete, all cement absorbs CO2. But because you produce so much CO2 to make it in the first place, some of these technologies just don't produce much CO2 when they make it. One I've seen based on fly ash,
rather than that's more sort of carbon neutral cement.
Yes, you've got
those now, which possibly suck up the carbon out of
here. And they worked out that just by replacing this, and it was not significantly more expensive per ton.
But with carbon credits, it pays for itself.
Yeah, but if we just change over to that in the next 3 or 4 years of building, we'd largely neutralise our carbon for most of the first water. That's just really seriously about large numbers of how much carbon we've been sucking out of the atmosphere. can we add
permaculture organic farming?
Yes, I'm glad to add that.
And I mention that because one of the technologies to actually increase the absorption of CO2 is the technique of the peat. That actually tends to absorb all of our carbon emissions each year.
And also because we need to get farm culture that is not so dependent on having basically pouring huge amounts of petrochemicals into it.
This one also has an advantage of cutting down what are they called, treble.
Food miles. We might have put transport in there.
Yeah, transport.
Public transport. Yes.
I went for the public transport authority.
Aquaculture.
But all the water comes from a tank where you also grow fish or gabbies or something. So they produce the
fertilizer. So it's self-supporting.
That's effectively a permaculture cycle.
Yep. It's probably a high-tech permaculture cycle, but yeah.
But just out of curiosity, who here grows any of their own food? You see, that's interesting. That's a very
good sign. You know, like claim credit. I live in the house, I claim credit.
2 weeks ago, digging trenches to make a no-dip garden, and got all that bread to fill it up. It was damn good fun, too.
I'm
like,
probably
digging
the trenches with
no-dip garden. Well, yeah,
it's garbage. Yeah. Construction is the infrastructure.
Dave, you opened your mouth for 3 weeks.
I think we're still on the good list. We've still got we haven't got into anything nanotech yet.
I was about to tell you. Thank you. Okay, I'm gonna put this crazy ass stuff in because that gotta go. Nanotech/ molecular engineering.
Bioengineering is probably where it's really at.
Yeah. So that's another example of molecular engineering.
I mean, the sort of engineered path to nanotech is proved to be a increasingly cool way of making amazing little gadgets, but it doesn't lend itself to the sort of massive scale technology that you need to deal with. So it's probably the bioengineering sort of.
But, you know, that doesn't stop people working on assemblies.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's a crazy ass one. Is everybody familiar with the concept of an assembler? Who is not? So I just okay, with a couple of knots. Assemblers are one of those things that Drexler came up with. I think Drexler was the first to
say. Yeah, how could you have lived with me for years and not pick up the basics of that?
Why is Drexler
there? No, other Sarah.
Oh, sorry.
Now there is a mistake. Okay, so when you start working on atomic scale engineering, where you're literally building things chosen atom by chosen atom and putting them together, there's this theoretical device that gets all the nanotech people all excited, not necessarily people ways either, where it's a self-assembling robot, effectively. It's a small general purpose for programmable self-assembling robot. Now the idea is they're really, really hard to build the first one. But once you've got one, you use it to build the second. And the second, then you get those two to build two more.
It's essentially, there's the two idea of nanotech re-engineering at the tiny molecular scale, and then this idea of a machine that can build itself. And then it gets around the problem of how do you, you know, if these molecular scale things are going to be very hard to build. Well, we just build the one nanotech assembler, and that'll build all the rest.
It's more a discussion, is this a pipe dream or
is
not?
Is this a pipe dream or not? And the interesting thing, though, at the moment, is actually the macro scale assemblers, which is that people are trying to build basically these big machines that are capable of building big, basically little mini machine shops that are then capable of building a mini machine shop with the assistance of a human being. Which is probably worth mentioning in itself, is this whole idea of FABS is the word I'm after, which is basically a FAB is basically a machine shop that is capable, if used correctly, of building another machine shop just like it. And the idea is that this is the way you can
basically create facilities for the industrialization of, you know, third world nations. You just go, well, we just need to train the people and they'll just build the things. We don't need to build them and ship them. And it's a bit of a dream, but it's really interesting.
That's like science fiction. I've seen one. Red wraps are 60%?
70%
self-replicating.
And then pushing that up with the generation two. What you end up having to buy is some servo motors, which they just can't work anyway doing those out of them. But these people do crazy stuff.
These people, they can't do the motors, they can't do, I think they can do just about everything else. So
generation two will do circuit boards.
Sorry, Paul, what did you say?
The critical electronics is the way to get around that.
Yeah,
well, just Gen 2 is designed to have a printable electronic head, so it will be able to print it.
It may be one of these ideas where the practical full realization of the idea is impossible, but getting 80 or 90% of the way there is actually pretty awesome.
Cool. Okay.
And I want one just because it's going to make for great costumes at SwanCon. Build bits of your own whatever you're going to wear.
More crazy, geeky ideas?
Any more feedback for good? Because we've covered a lot. Maybe what we should do is now feedback to the bad and say, okay, what are these going to help with?
We haven't put geoengineering.
We'll put that on. That's
dangerous. It may be necessary.
That's okay.
It may be kind of mad, but it may be.
Well, it's the kind of idea that Holland's been doing it for centuries.
Could argue that we don't know the results and we'll just destroy the planet while we're
Yeah. That's why it's dangerous.
Yeah, that's why we make it dangerous.
Replicators.
The water side. Notice there's a few devices coming out now which hopefully provide the cheap energy to be able to basically distilling water, condensing water out of the air to produce drinkable water provided you're somewhere that has, you know, more than 0% humidity.
Well, that and very simple devices for making.
Yeah,
there's some very simple cheap devices for making water potable.
But they all need energy.
They do need
a meter of black plastic.
Some energy. But
it's sufficient to provide enough potable water.
I was trying to design with the help of one of my uncles who's a farmer. We were slightly drunk, and many great ideas were formed from. And we were discussing a concept for a brute force desalination process based around basically, you know, that big half pipes that the farming, the mining community use. They're cutting them in half, big bag of plastic over the top, running the saline solution in it, and just tapping off the water and then using that to irrigate the field so that you're pushing the water table, the salt back down. I think we gave up because it was a couple of things that were a bit too hard. But okay, so back to our list of the bad. What have we been sort of solved? Okay. Still there. But we can certainly diminish it if we can solve. Move away from dependence on petrochemicals, get cleaner power, minimize our food kilometers. Plus, we could also do some carbon sequestering through a variety of different techniques. Who here doesn't like the idea of the ones where they're like, oh, we'll just pump carbon dioxide deep into the crust? It just sounds like a bad idea.
Oh, well, look, it's basically a solution for the coal industry to continue.
Yeah,
that's the only reason it's proposed.
It's not proven that it's a way for them to get more money to investigate.
Short-sighted.
Okay, so we can probably minimise or decrease some of that one with a little light.
But I think realistically, it's looking like we're going to need a lot of different solutions. Yeah,
there's no
one solution that we're going to need.
All sunshades. they're on the list.
The other one I always. Don't do that with albedo modification. Just largely drop a couple of nukes in a bit of ocean that we don't really care about to pump huge volumes of water deep into the high atmosphere or change our. No, let's not. Let's
just not. Pour sulfur into the.
That makes sunshade sound quite.
I actually read a science fiction story where, in the end, it was two generals, one American, one Russian, who got it. I think it's dying.
you know, reprogram the first strike to hit the middle of the ocean, and then it goes, you know, no, Peru and his heroes right at the point where the first ice age started.
So the ones, John, the one is the farming techniques.
Yeah.
And the other is, I guess, what do you call it? Thermal venting into space.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of interesting things you can do. One of the things that comes out of this one that a lot of people may not realise is that cattle, and, well, livestock in general, are a great source of methane, which is one of our more noxious greenhouse gases. Because it's not just carbon dioxide, it's, well, any of those greenhouse gases, and they're methane, they're really good one. Which also is a problem with our current waste disposal, which is this one over here in a lot of ways. So, you know, if you do a lot of good stuff to this one and do a lot of good stuff to this one and do some clever stuff to this one,
But the problem with peak oil is, I mean, the idea of peak oil itself, that, you know, the amount of easy to get oil will, you know, rise as our techniques get better and then
drop
as we've used up all the easy to get at stuff is reasonable. And not intrinsically a problem, it's just a natural consequence of a non-sustainable resource. The bit where it becomes the crisis is where you combine the sudden turnaround in availability with presumably ever increasing curve for demand, and you just get this point where the disparity between the two becomes huge very quickly. And if we manage to pull back and reduce demand for petrochemicals at about the same time peak oil hits, it's a problem, but it's not a crisis.
Yeah. Well, there's all sorts of fueled economy measures that are coming down the pipeline. I think it's Fiat has not mentioned, which is like, you know, they're going to produce a two-cylinder engine for small consumer cars, because it's like a huge power ratio. It uses half the petrol, and pure things like that.
No,
greatly reduce our fuel.
The old kilometres per litre thing, we could do a lot. And one of the easiest ones is just don't buy those damn SUVs, you damn Americans.
The real problem isn't just the fuel, it's the space taken up by roads and cars.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot afford to destroy our city building more roads. I mean, here in WA, you know, near in Kenworth is worth of shape of cities versus up to the petrol, and it really comes down to when you're looking at what to do for that whole problem, including arable space, livable space, the shape of cities. You really need to redesign the city so that you don't need the private motor cars as well.
Perth is actually one of the worst in the world for it. We've got the population of Perth and the surface area of Greater Sydney.
Perth is a classic city where the entire design of the city is post-car, basically.
I know that during the 80s we had the second highest number of cars per head of population in the world. The only larger was Los Angeles.
In LA, the other one was very spread out, too much error.
In LA, they have this expression for Greater LA where they talk about the Inland Empire. There's this huge, you know, the LA people think of when they think of LA, Hollywood and all of that stuff is this the inner city part, but there's this huge swathe of millions of people who just live in identical rolling suburbs with these sort of big American houses and identical walls. Very, very
interesting. At any point, somebody pointed out this to me years ago, grab Google Earth, zoom in on the coast of Florida and start scrolling. Get an idea of how the American government cities. Because it's marinas. And you scroll. If I was scrolling in Western Australia, I'd go Perth to Bunbury and endless
marinas. I was going to say, it was LA Megacity 2 or 3?
It was Megacity 2. Because Megacity 3 was Texas City.
That's right.
2018.
Can I mention the elephant in the room?
Yes.
Air travel. If we reduce our carbon emissions from all other sources to zero, the projected increase in air travel will still blow our carbon budget.
Yeah.
We need Zeppelin, guys.
We need Zeppelin. And there's so little you can do about it.
Yeah.
Wait, sorry.
I don't know your name. What's your name? I would say that the carbon that promises much individual cars and everything is that it's called
we went into the diesel engine more than anything, except for trucks and your trains. And yeah, unfortunately, planes are another one where there is no option. There's a cover of plane on high
pressure. You can do a 25% reduction using various designs, but there's nothing radical on the horizon.
Yeah. Everything else, you can swap to an alternative.
Shay?
I mean, a lot of that, it's cultural acceptance. You know, you have to do business face to face. How many people actually need to drive to work to print documents and send documents to someone else that couldn't do it, you know, on the phone? I mean,
the plane travel is tourist travel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not business travel. Yeah, that's the problem.
Sorry, Paul, did I cut you off before you finished speaking?
No, not really.
Further on from Rose, but the other problem is with travel. If we want to be there now, whereas, say, with Zeppelin, it takes us 2 weeks to get there.
It'd be
a downflying journey. It'd be a downflying journey.
More than 10 ships.
It's not up here at this
point. No.
It's been like 2 weeks.
Make the world more
unfettered. That journey is just enough to heal you in the world.
And to the current demand.
There is a lot of argument that hydrogen zeppelins are not necessarily as bad as
they were. The problem was not so much the hydrogen in the zeppelin, but the zeppelin itself was ridiculously
inflamed. No, the problem was all the helium mines were in America, and they wouldn't sell the helium to the Germans.
Hydrogen is better as a...
It's way more fuel efficient.
Yeah. These diesel engines and ships are one of the things, almost as a counter to what Paul was saying, is that when you talk to companies involved in trucking, the vast majority of them that are serious about their business are looking at many ways. This is not just trucks, but this is any transport, are looking where possible in ways to maximise their fuel efficiency. A good example, again, from a company that I worked for was there's a little company called Curtis Industrial, who were running 7-part road trains up there. 7 segments. These things, the joke was you'd take a packed lunch to go to the side. But they used to park them in an old abandoned ball skating rink. And the truck would stick out the front, the back, the carriage would stick out the back. And they were slow. My God, could we get some good miles?
Okay, we just need to wrap this point up, move on.
Okay.
Running out of time, what else did you want to
bring up? So we've looked at these. There's nothing that, there's something that we can't fix with technology. Well, easily fix with technology, because we do have here fundamentalism and totalitarianism. And I have a kind of crazy one about how to fix that, but it does involve dropping pornography on fundamentalism. I'm not sure if it's going to work, but it's going to be fun.
The thing that just smashed down fundamentalism is that it's not, at the moment we think of it very much as a problem about Islam. And it certainly is a problem.
I was actually thinking that was well heard.
It's a problem. But the thing that really gets me is that fundamentalism appears to be basically the same problem, no matter what religion. The thing that really fascinates me about it at the moment is looking at the rise of Hindu fundamentalism. And, you know, saying, well, these guys are from, you know, a pantheistic, or mystical, blah, 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 but they're still the same assholes.
Is there a solution?
Yeah. But is there a solution? Is the question. I mean, it seems to be, well,
there's an argument there's many radicals in a well-fed middle-class society,
as you do in a poor third-world society.
And in fact, it's the nations that have the contrast where it really seems to be France taking off.
So one of the scariest things about fundamentalism that I find is that the more educated the children. And they're going to be overwhelmed with all these funding, just fundamental types who are having huge families. It's just
How do you solve that one?
The interesting thing about the Middle East at the moment, well, which is where we think about fundamentals being an issue, is the Middle East at the moment is astonishingly young. The demographics are so skewed towards young people rather than old, and that's their view on life is, the way the whole area region works is inevitably going to change as they all move from their 20s to their 40s.
It's going to start. I remember being 20. I was full of fire and vengeance.
You're 10 years old. Now not.
It's fundamentally and totalitarianism to a degree. They both have the same sorts of solutions. Partly it's economic abundance.
Yeah.
And partly it's education and communication. There are no studies looking in North Korea at the moment because the southern part of North Korea has been flooded with mobile phones and cheap PCRs.
Okay.
That's
perfect example, China, for a totalitarian state that's making itself wealthy, and it's using that wealth to stop any cracks appearing in the
But the Great Wall of China, the Great Firewall of China is leaking, I can see it.
I think it's to you look at the Chinese protests during the Olympics and the reaction to anyone who dared say anything about Tibet. It's really deeply ingrained in the citizenry.
If
the government provides them with the goods and the welfare and increases standards of living, right.
So do we have a solution?
It's very familiar with the mudgrass horse.
Most of the problems are problems with the planet will survive if we get rid of the people. This is all part of pandemics.
Frighteningly, totalitarianism is one of the only useful solutions. Things despite.
Well, I know, it will stop all the air travel.
Yes, if you can.
People who haven't spoken yet, Desmond, did you have something to say? Okay. And I don't know your name, except your radio, you're quite Billy Zane, so.
Neil.
Neil, hi.
Could it be that that one of these problems could actually solve another if a nuclear war were to occur? Could that be the solution to global war in terms of the resulting war?
The problem with nuclear war is yes, you get a nuclear winter from a couple of weeks to a couple of months, but the long term damage to your ozone layer is so fundamental that they talk about the nuclear war, you get a short nuclear winter for it, but a long one will kill something like that.
So it won't kill.
I wouldn't say that was the problem.
No, it's just one of them, though. They're saying, oh, it's going to fix our biosphere. No, it's going to really root it out in a way.
Okay, so,
no.
A natural catastrophe.
Societal collapse.
When you're talking about the pandemic, I mean,
it's
crazy.
Big problem with pandemics is you don't know what they're going to be until they're there. You could probably guess it will be some version of influenza based on the last couple of them.
Based on the fact that we're due for it.
We're due for an influenza.
My mother was in aged care and she was supposed to come up with a pandemic plan. And it was more of a conversation between she and her work colleague where she would go back to working in the kitchen that way. And her colleague would stay in the office and just communicate through the window rather than the issue. And then the next time she got sent her to a conference where we could manage to keep 3 months of food in her house always. and strongly recommended that everyone in the conference do the same.
You know, it's also suggested instead of food, because that perishes, keep things that are tradable.
Yeah. That's the social collapse.
Yes.
Sorry.
This is one of the sort of myths that is interesting.
I say grain, Western problem.
Yeah.
Very Western problem.
That is a Western problem.
And that's a typical problem that is considered
See, in the Middle East, it's the opposite.
Yeah,
the incredibly young population at the moment.
And Africa.
Yeah, regional problems are always very interesting.
The exchange program. Here, have some of our old people.
Listen to their wisdom. I've got to get my nana and I don't want to.
You've heard of fundamentalism. Well, yeah.
So are we pretty much up to pollution now?
We're sort of been bouncing around a bit. Because,
We need to start wrapping
it
up.
It's interesting seeing what people are... Is it Norway that's doing the world's largest gene bank?
Yeah,
except they were using the permafrost to do it, and that's all disappearing. Well, I think we're pretty much out of time on the phone.
Yeah, so is there any final questions?
Final comments. We don't have solutions here, but we've got a little bit of hope on the other side of the board.
It's not really surprising you can't solve the problems of the world in an hour.
But if you had two.
Well, it's lunch. We're halfway there, surely. A lot of these. The interesting thing is that there are suggested solutions to almost all of these problems, except the ones that are just people. And I don't think the human nature is. I mean, it may be a source of trouble, but it's one that we've faced successfully for a few thousand years. We're probably going to deal with another wave of fundamentalism, just like we did the last one. Okay, that was several centuries of dark ages, but perhaps not. It's interesting that there's so many solutions to them, and a lot of it seems to be bringing the scale down, apart from the geoengineering, most of them it's like we're trying to work on smaller community scale things that you work at the local level.
These things about changing perceptions.
And the changing perceptions, but they're also the problem. A lot of them, it seems like we're close to the answer, and then the big problem is going to be social and political will to deploy it, and that's going to be that's basically going to be the politics for the next 20 years for everybody.
Any final comments, John?
No, I think that I was very happy with the panel. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that.
That
was
fun.
That wasn't too bad, was it?
No, it's fun.
Yeah. My God, we stayed on topic.
Yeah, that sounds me.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.